So first of all, the Tisha B'Av, the Tisha B'Av program and the Shiurim and the Kinos are sponsored by Herb and Helene Wallenstein in memory of their parents, Dina and Morris Wallenstein Zal, and Rose and Samuel Flatel Zal, and the schus of the learning and the introspection that we do over the next day or so, the neshama should have an aliyah. The goal of Tisha B'Av is to take one day during the year and process all of our collective national suffering and to try to find some meaning in the suffering, in the tragedy and in the pain. In 2022, in relative comfort, we try to imagine what life was like for the Jew for most of the past 2,000 years, and we try to relate to our often tragic history. But it's difficult for us to truly relate because we weren't there. Often, when we try to relate to our tragedies, we are left unsatisfied because we ask, why did this happen? Or more precisely, why did God allow this to happen? If we are the chosen nation, why must we be chosen to suffer? And we try to answer that we suffer for our collective national sins, and yet it is difficult to think of the most recent large-scale national tragedy, the Holocaust, in this way. I will be spending some time tomorrow morning addressing the different approaches to answer this question, but it's a very difficult question. Maybe the goal of Tisha B'Av is not only to mourn over the tragedy, but it's also to see how our ancestors reacted to tragedy, to perhaps give us inspiration when we try to deal with this question. So let me share with you three Holocaust stories. Story number one, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Meisels, Rav of the city of Weizen in Hungary, survived Auschwitz. On the eve of Rosh Hashanah 1944, the Nazi commanders of Auschwitz determined to keep alive those boys between the age of 14 and 18 who were strong enough to work. The other boys would be sent to the crematorium. A vertical post with a horizontal bar affixed at a predetermined height was planted on the ground. Each boy was to pass under the bar. If his height reached the bar, he was sent to work detail. If he was not tall enough, then he would be killed. 1,600 boys passed the test, and 1,400 boys did not pass the test. And the 1,400 boys were imprisoned in a special cell block under guard of Jewish capos. They were to receive no food or drink, and they would be sent to the crematorium the next night. In the morning, on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, fathers who heard of the fate awaiting their children tried to persuade the capos to free them. The capos replied that an exact count had been taken of the boys, and if one boy was found missing, the capo would have to pay with his own life. Still, relatives bribed greedy capos to free their children. But for each prisoner released, the capo would seize another Jewish boy to make up the quota. Now, Rabbi Meisels was approached by a Jew from Oberlin who said, "Rabbi, my only son is in the cell block. However, I have enough money to ransom him. But I know for certain that if he's released, the capos will take another in his place to be killed. So, Rabbi, may I save his life if at the expense of another? Whatever your ruling is, I will obey it." Rabbi Meisels responded by saying, "I am in Auschwitz, I have no svarim or other colleagues, and no clarity of mind. Maybe after the releasing the boys, the capos might somehow not attempt to take another child, but what if they take the child before releasing the other child?" Rabbi Meisels did not want to answer the question. However, the father insisted. He said, "I need a definitive answer." Rabbi Meisels responded, "Don't ask me the question anymore. I can't answer the question. The father then said, this means that you can find no heter, no allowance, for me to ransom my only son. I accept this judgment in love. Rabbi Maizel said, don't rely on me. The father responded, I asked the question, and this is what you said, and the father accepted that there was no allowance to ransom his son if it meant that another boy would take his place. The father prayed on Rosh Hashanah that his act might be acceptable in the sight of the Almighty as Avraham's binding of Yitzchak, which is the highlight of the Rosh Hashanah prayers. Story number two. Simon Wiesenthal was in the Mauthausen concentration camp. After the camp was liberated, Rabbi Eliezer Silver, the head of Agudas HaRabbonim in the United States, came to help and comfort the survivors. Rabbi Silver organized a special service. They invited Wiesenthal to join the other survivors in praying. Mr. Wiesenthal declined, and he explained why. He said, when I was in the camp, I saw many different types of people do different things. There was one religious man of whom I was in awe when I saw that he smuggled a sitter into the camp. I was amazed that he took the risk of his life in order to bring the sitter in the concentration camp. But then the next day, to my horror, I realized that he was taking the sitter and renting it out to people in exchange for giving him their last piece of bread. The man was so thin that when he started eating so much from the people renting out his sitter, he actually died before everyone. And Mr. Wiesenthal continued, I was so angry with this Jew. How could he take a holy sitter and use it to take a person's last piece of bread away? So I am not going to pray if this is how Jews behave, if this is what they do with something that is supposed to be a prayer book. As Wiesenthal turned to walk away, Rabbi Silver tapped him on the shoulder and gently said in Yiddish, Oi, nar, silly boy. Why do you look at the Jew who rented out his sitter to take away people's last meals? Why do you look at that bad Jew? Why don't you look at the dozens of Jews who gave up their last piece of bread in order to be able to use a sitter? Story number three. Rabbi Yekutiel Yehuda Halberstam, the Klausenberg Rebbe, wrote the following. I was sent to the Warsaw Ghetto to perform forced labor with mortar and bricks. One day, as we stood at the top of one of the houses, a strong driving rain suddenly hit us. The wicked ones pressed us on. Finish your work. Don't stop. It was almost beyond human ability. Then one of the oppressed ones, who knew me, turned to me and screamed, Are you still going to recite Asher Bachar Banu, you have chosen us, a blessing recited every morning, thanking God for choosing the Jewish nation from amongst all the nations and rejoice as a member of the chosen nation? I replied that until that day I had not recited it with the proper intention, but that from then on, when I said, Asher Bachar Banu Mikal Ha'amim, that you have chosen us from all the nations, I would concentrate more and more deeply and rejoice in my heart with no bounds. When I saw that, he was astounded and bemused at my words, I explained further. It must certainly be so, for if it were not that you have chosen us from all the nations, then I too would become an oppressor. Better that I remain in my present state than become like one of them, God forbid. And happy is my lot. The Jew who accepted Rav Maizel's non-ruling and refused to save his son if it meant that another boy would die. All the Jews who gave up their last piece of bread in order to use a sitter. The Klausenberg Rebbe saying the bracha of Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Ha'amim, blessing God that He chose us from all the nations with greater kavana during the Holocaust, appreciating that we are the oppressed rather than the oppressor. How did they do it? How did they demonstrate halachic commitment, passion for mitzvah observance, and Jewish pride under these circumstances at a time that God hid Himself from us? The Chafetz Chaim once said, for the believer, there are no questions. And for the unbeliever, there are no answers. Maybe in 2022, when it's hard to truly appreciate the depth of our national tragedies in our relative state of comfort, when it's hard to fathom how God could allow such tragedies to occur, we can nevertheless draw strength from the spiritual heroism of our ancestors who demonstrated halachic commitment, passion for mitzvah observance, and Jewish pride, even under the worst circumstances, even when faced directly with the difficult theological question of why did God allow this to happen. Maybe we can emerge from this day not only internalizing the tragedies that we are remembering and not only reflecting on the spiritual causes of the tragedies, but maybe we can emerge from this day drawing strength from our role models, from the past and the present, and committing ourselves to be a little better with greater halachic commitment, more passionate mitzvah observance, and more Jewish pride, even when we find ourselves in trying circumstances.